You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
This morning on the Breakfast Grill, we welcome Dr. Mohammad Zamzam Jaafar, the Chief Executive of the Malaysia Nuclear Power Corp, on the grill this morning. Now, Doc, it's very interesting that we have you on the grill this morning because obviously we are going through some challenging times on the weather front. Global warming is said to be one of the major causes behind it. And for you to now, you know, I guess make the media rounds in terms of perhaps talking up and softening the ground for a possible introduction of nuclear as a potential power source is quite interesting. And can you give us a bit of background in terms of why Malaysia has decided to go down the nuclear route at this point in time?
Well, first and foremost, the government in 2008 mentioned about nuclear option in the briefing on the budget. Then the government set up a National Steering Committee on Nuclear Power Development at that time in 2009, headed by the Ministry of Energy, Green Technology and Water. And this started the whole thing. Then in 2011, the government set up MNPC to be what they call the Nuclear Energy Program Implementing Organization.
The originator and the brains behind it, I guess the starter of it, was Tun Abdullah Ahmad Badawi, the former Prime Minister. Yes. Why do you think that he decided to go down this route, especially in a time when, you know, there was other potential, you know, sources like solar or wave power, or perhaps even, you know, hydro, which we have in East Malaysia?
Okay, we have been talking about hydro since you started with hydro from Sarawak for many, many years. And until today, we have not been able to transfer that power from Sarawak to Peninsular Malaysia. So that option is still in the drawing board until today. The second option is regarding solar and also wind power. Malaysia is in the equator and our wind is not that much, that strong compared to what we call, when we learn geography in our school days before, we talk about the roaring 40s, latitude 40s, where the wind is much, much stronger. And that's why countries like Denmark, Germany and so on are relying on wind power. So in our country, for Peninsular Malaysia, most of the hydro that we have are fully developed or being developed. So they are today serving as what we call peaking or intermediate duty power stations, not for base load. For base load, we depend on coal and gas. And nuclear is an option for base load power in Peninsular Malaysia.
So here we are, I guess, nearly 9 years later from Tun Badawi's time. And we understand that the final report of the Integrated Nuclear Infrastructure Review is up for tabling in Parliament, I think, either later this month or next month.
No, it's for tabling at the Cabinet.
Sorry, tabling at Cabinet level. Yes, yes. Okay.
Basically, it's to get the Cabinet approval whether to make the report public or not.
Which beggars the question of why it was secret in the first place. Because obviously nuclear is quite a contentious power source, and the formulation of this report was made under quite, I guess, confidential environments. Why was that?
Well, we try to be as open as possible. This is what is recommended by the International Atomic Energy Agency. We have to be open and transparent.
Yeah, but why was it done in such covert situations?
It is not covert. We have been going out. It's just that we have been doing a lot of studies. And the decision of the government is to postpone nuclear power from, at that time in the ETP report, it says 2021 as the operation date of the first unit. It's now to postpone to beyond 2030.
Presumably, that postponement came in the wake of the Fukushima nuclear disaster. A lot of countries around the world, like Japan and the Germans as well, decided to forego their nuclear emissions. So
one of the reasons is, of course, Fukushima.
One of the interesting, probably one of the most major reasons because of the media fallout. But why has this plan come back onto the drawing board?
Been studying this since 2009, as I said just now. And we set up MNPC in 2011 in general. Then 2 months after MNPC was set up, Fukushima happened. So we continued with what we were supposed to do. So we were set up as a company limited by guarantee. And we have a very small workforce. And our main objective is to plan, spearhead and coordinate nuclear power development in Peninsular Malaysia.
So according to Dato' Sri Nancy Shukri, she said that Malaysia is thoroughly prepared and has developed a considerable base of knowledge to make an informed decision about introducing nuclear power. Now, what kind of details is she referring to? What thorough preparation is she referring to?
Okay, the IEA recommendation is for a 3-phase development for nuclear power. Phase 1, Phase 2 and Phase 3. Phase one is to decide whether to proceed with the project or not, or to be the program or not. So in this case, we are ready to make that decision to proceed with the program. That is what we got. But whether we go, the next stage is to work on the project. So that then we have to invite bids for contract signing, and then we will complete it by commissioning the unit, the first unit. So this will take a long time.
So we're at stage one now. We've got the pros and we've got the cons. Yes. Let's start with the pros.
The pros is, of course, nuclear power is one of the most proven baseload option to replace coal or to replace gas. This is worldwide. Okay, we have over 30 countries that have nuclear power around the world. And we have also two new countries that will be joining as the nuclear club. First is Iran, that joined around 2000 or so, and then 2010 or so. And then latest one will be Abu Dhabi or United Arab Emirates. That will be running the first nuclear plant in the Arab world in 2017, end of this year, I think.
So right now, Malaysia's annual energy needs are something in the order of about 20,000 megawatts annually.
I think in Peninsula Malaysia, I think it's around 17,000
on the peninsula.
That's a peak demand, yes.
I think coal and gas are the main feedstock materials.
Around 90%, yes.
So best case scenario, how many percent of Malaysia's load can nuclear account for?
It depends on what is our program.
What is the specification?
We have decided on the program. Okay. But we know like countries like in this region, we have got Japan, which have after Fukushima, they have decided that by 2030, 20 to 22% of the energy mix will come from nuclear. Even, you know, we must remember Japan, they had the nuclear bomb drop on them. They had Fukushima. They still have faith in nuclear power. Of course, it's not an easy task that they are going through, but they are going ahead with nuclear because they have no other choice. Well, they are importing a lot of their energy sources.
Correct, and they can't afford it. Therefore, they're thinking of restarting the turbines. But as you point out, Malaysia is just, well, potentially one of just a few dozen countries around the world with nuclear power capabilities. There's a lot of considerations to account for, the cost being one, the regulation being another, and of course the safety aspects being another. Yeah. So you've talked about nuclear being a reliable power source. Yes, that's established and it's quite an old one as well. But what about the cons?
So the cons is, of course, today the cost of nuclear is not as competitive compared to what it was in 2008. In 2008, the oil price was $140 per barrel. Now it's around 50 or so. So, when of course, oil is the benchmark price for other fuels, including coal and also gas. So, oil, well, today we are burning, Malaysia is burning a lot of more coal plants because we'll bring more coal plants and we'll be burning more coal because coal is cheaper today. But, of course, the world also has also signed the Paris Agreement. They are trying to reduce the carbon. They are going for a low-carbon energy environment. So this is something that we have to think also because that is the future. The future trend is to go for clean and low carbon energy source.
I notice you haven't yet mentioned the aspect of safety and about potential risk of disaster, I guess. I mean, Fukushima was precipitated by a tsunami. Obviously, waves trespassed the walls and caused the disaster to occur. So from a safety standpoint, that must surely rank as one of the biggest cons, yeah, Doc?
Okay, if you look at what happened after Fukushima, the Japanese have imposed more stringent safety requirements for nuclear plants to be operating in the country. And, you know, Japan is an island state. It has no interconnection with other countries. Peninsula Malaysia is also virtually like an island. We have very limited interconnection possibility with Thailand or with Singapore. Well, we have been talking to Indonesia for a long time to have interconnection between Sumatra and us, and we still haven't got it, just like our intention to transfer power from hydropower from Sarawak to Peninsula Malaysia. So these are things that could happen. So that's why we say we cannot ignore nuclear power because it's something that has been proven, and we may not need it, but at this time, we just look for it, we study, and see whether we need it after 2030 or not.
Well, I guess in terms of stakeholder management, Dr. Zamzam, you know, obviously the government being one of your major stakeholders has a lot of sway in this issue. But some surveys conducted by, you know, the BOFINs have suggested that the Malaysian government has not been transparent enough in communicating nuclear to the public. When we see some of the surveys, you know, quite a strong proportion of the respondents have said they strongly disagree that the government has been transparent about it. So do you think that, you know, more should have been done to talk to the Malaysian public about the pros and cons of nuclear?
In the 11 Malaysia Plan report, it is stated clearly that communication is one of the activities that we should focus on in the next 5 years or next 4 years. And the second one is, of course, we have to table the bill, the nuclear bill in Parliament. So the nuclear bill will create an independent regulator. And this, we hope, will bring confidence to the public that the regulator is competent and effective and independent of the government to be able to decide whether nuclear is safe or not. So that is our intention.
We are talking this morning to Dr. Mohamed Zamzam Jaafar, the Chief Executive of the Malaysia Nuclear Power Corp, on the grill this morning. Doc, we're going to discuss after this your views and your planning in terms of the potential vendors, potential sites, and in terms of the potential funding options for Malaysia's nuclear ambitions. Today on the Breakfast Grill, we have with us Dr. Mohamed Zamzam Jaafar, the Chief Executive of the Malaysia Nuclear Power Corp, and we're discussing Malaysia's nuclear ambitions. Now, some of the narrative in the Malaysian newspapers in terms of what you responded to the reporters, it appears that Malaysia is already on the path to becoming a nuclear a country that relies on nuclear power as a power source. Now, I want to quote what you told in newspapers. Malaysia will only build a nuclear power plant after 2021 when all the other resources for fuel are depleting. So it seems as if
That was some time ago.
That's right.
Okay.
So,
The latest statement is we are not going to have nuclear power in operation before 2030.
Okay. So you use the word will not or will do. So these sound like absolute phrases.
Yeah.
So even though we've got a bill and there's a report, it sounds as if Malaysia is already down this path.
Because
It
takes a long time to prepare for nuclear power. I'll give an example. United Kingdom is building their first nuclear power plant right now. It's after more than 20 years. Okay, they have had experience of nuclear power for 50 years. They started the first nuclear power station connected to the grid in the Western world in 1955 or so. So now, after so long, they decided to include nuclear as part of the energy mix. In 2006, they only signed the contract to build the first nuclear plant in 2016. That's a 10-year interval.
Why do you think the British took so long to implement this
plan? Because they had to convince the public, they have to convince their MPs, they have to table bills in Parliament. They have to get the Queen sign the bill, the energy bill, and of course to win the community around the side.
So these fears are not unfounded, Doc.
Yeah? Including.
Would you agree? In the wake of Chernobyl, in the wake of Fukushima.
Yes.
Till today we see all kinds of reports that even on the shores of California, thousands of kilometers away from Japan, there has been signs of radiation in sea life. So it only takes one disaster, even though there's 30 countries, as you say, around the world with nuclear power.
But radiation is normal, is natural. You see,
not at elevated levels, they're not.
They are on the ground level. You have got radiation. It's just that we have to measure the background. It's just that we don't measure it. You don't carry dosimeter on you. So radiation is a normal thing. It's a normal phenomenon. It's a natural thing. It's God created. So we believe, we accepted that. But when it is man-made accident, then we worry about it.
Which is what Fukushima was. Okay. Which is what Chernobyl
Fukushima
was.
Fukushima is both, to me, is natural and man-made.
Well, TEPCO has admitted negligence in its handling.
But the point is the cause of it is because of tsunami.
Correct. Okay. But it's only after the tsunami happened that TEPCO's shortcomings were discovered. Would you agree?
Yes, to a certain extent, yes.
So the Malaysian example, we've got great plans. We've got great planners. Execution is quite another kettle of fish.
No, as I said just
and,
now.
And regulation is another kettle of fish. So Malaysia does not have a good track record when it comes to regulation or management.
As I said just now, after Fukushima, the Japanese put more stringent regulations in place to make it more safe. And today, Japan has 42 nuclear plants which can be operated, but only 3 are running.
And that's the reason why?
The reason is because they have to make sure that the plants satisfy the new requirements, and it costs a lot of investment. And number two, they have to also win over the community around the site. So this is something that we also have to do. We must make sure that the plant is safe, and it is safe to international standards, not just to Malaysian, but international standards. And in China today, for instance, they are not going to build new plants not Generation 2, but Generation 3 plants. So we are talking about better design, which can satisfy better safety. And these are things that will be happening around the world today.
Dr. Mohamed Zamzam Jaafar, the Chief Executive of the Malaysian Nuclear Power Corp, with us on the grill this morning. Stick on the same theme, Doc. I think some of the narrative in the newspapers is also been that Malaysia has not identified a potential site for its plant. You have mentioned, I think, it's got to be by the coastline, it's got to be elevated, it's got to be on a hill, and it's got to be, of course, lenient to the community around it. So obviously nobody wants a nuclear power station in their vicinity by a long way. Where is the current discussion on this site?
The moment this is postponed, the site is being postponed, okay? You see, what happened after when we were formed, we were supposed to look at site. But what happened is in 2012, 2013, there were a lot of protests about Linas. Okay, if that was Linas,
and quite rightly so
Linas
as well.
Attracted protests.
That's right.
So the government felt that if we talk about nuclear power at this time after Fukushima, it will attract big protests. That's why we started to postpone that issue for the time
being. In your opinion, Generation 3 nuclear power plants, how safe are they?
You see, if you look at the current thinking, is that one of the plants that we are looking at is AP1000, for instance. Okay, it has got a 3-day safety features, specific features that do not have to be. No, there is no need for human intervention for the next 72 hours after an accident happened. So you have got more time, plan what you need to do to tackle the problem. In Fukushima, they didn't have that much time.
So you're saying that they're relatively safe and more safe than the Fukushima power plant. Yes. Is it safe enough, for example, to be placed in Putrajaya?
I would imagine, yes. Because if you look at nuclear plants today, they are very close to communities. But of course, Putrajaya may not be the place because it's not by the coast. You need cooling water.
Well, Malaysia has an abundance of water. Surely they can be harvested and utilized.
Okay. The first nuclear plant in Asia are all built along the coast. You talk about Vietnam, you talk about Taiwan, you talk about Korea, you talk about China, you talk about Japan. So this country, even Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates, they're building their plants by the coast.
Well, now that you mentioned Vietnam, I think Vietnam and Bangladesh as well had nuclear ambitions, and they both since dialed back their ambitions. Why do you think they did that?
Vietnam has stated that, number one, is because their demand is not growing as fast as they anticipated when they first started. Number two, the cost of the plant is much higher than what they were thinking. And number three is, I think they need to be more time to prepare.
So I'm going to ask you a very personal question because you are in charge of the Malaysian Nuclear Power Corp. And I'm getting the sense that maybe you're not a vigorous or a vehement supporter of nuclear, because obviously there's a lot of pros and cons as well. Do you 100% believe, hand on heart, that nuclear power is the way to go for this country?
It depends on what is our situation. For the time being, if we don't use coal, because the world is moving away from coal, like what we used to move away from oil in the power generation, then we have to find an alternative source.
There are alternatives. There's oil, there's gas, there's biomass, there's a whole bunch of other.
It's going to be very expensive.
Not right now, it isn't, and not for the foreseeable future.
So we have moved away from oil for a long time. Anyway, so then you have got fossil fuel that emits a lot of carbon dioxide is not the future. We have to go for low carbon energy source. Maybe gas is something that we can tolerate because it is much lower compared to carbon. But you see, in our country, we have got this pipeline gas. The capacity is 2,000 million standard cubic feet per day. In order to go more gas, we have to build another one to increase that capacity. And that is something that we have to think also in the future. So the alternative is, of course, nuclear is an option to me. So it depends on what happens in the future.
Now, one of the reasons that the Vietnamese government cited to not go down the nuclear route was the cost. And obviously, it cost a few billion US dollars to build just one power plant. Yeah. I think some years ago, you had to fend off newspaper reports that you actually awarded contracts to Russian vendors like Rosatom.
I don't think it was correct.
It was never denied, right? But the other issue with Malaysia, and in terms of its procurement practices in its tender process, or lack thereof, is that Malaysia does not tend to be very transparent in how it doles out contracts, especially multi-billion dollar contracts. What is your report? What are the...
In our case...
Vendors be appointed under the nuclear power scheme?
So we have talked to all vendors. We have to follow what happened in United Arab Emirates. That was our model for when we started. Okay, they signed the contract in December of 2009, and they will build their first nuclear plant in 2017.
How much will that cost?
The cost of the United Arab Emirates stated in the report, 4 units of 1,400 megawatts at 20 billion US dollars.
In total.
Four units of 1,400. Then the latest one is United Kingdom. They're building their first nuclear power plant, two units of 1,630 megawatts. The cost they are stating is 18 billion pounds.
Okay, so that's quite a lot of money.
Yes.
First of all, what is the tender process going to be? Will it be open and fair? The second thing is, how does Malaysia plan to pay for this?
Okay, the first thing is, of course, you will look at UAE. They talk to all the vendors and they shortlisted three. They invited three for formal bids and they evaluated the formal bids. And
will Malaysia follow a similarly open tender?
As I said, we use UAE as our model. So at this time, we have talked to all the vendors. We have talked to Areva, we have talked to Mitsubishi, we have talked to Toshiba, we have talked to Hitachi, we have talked to Rosatom, we have talked to Canadian Energy, we have talked to Westinghouse, and we have even talked to the Chinese. So we have to talk about 8 vendors. So now we have to, the next step is, of course, to shortlist them. But we have not done anything because we have postponed our project.
What does the initial planning say about how it's going to be funded?
The funding is, of course, at this time, if you look at the world, there are two types of funding. The first one is what they call G2G arrangement. The second one is, of course, private sector. The private sector one is, look at Turkey. In Turkey, the Russian has offered to build a nuclear power plant, build, own and operate the first nuclear plant built by them, 100% owned by the Russian. But later on, they will divest their interest to own about 51% majority.
Some kind of privatization process. Yeah. Okay.
So in the UK too, the first project is going to be funded by the French EDF and also the Chinese CGN. It's going to be a joint venture funded by private sector. Okay. Companies outside of the country. Then you look at Bangladesh. In Bangladesh, it's a G2G arrangement where the Russians have agreed to give a loan of 90% at a cap of interest of about 4% to make it attractive. And these are options that we can look at.
So I guess, Doc Zamzam, the fact that you're here talking to us in the media must, I guess, indicate that you are on some kind of like a development timetable. You've got something to announce and what's up next. What should the Malaysian public expect from the government in terms of its nuclear ambitions for, say, the next 6 to 12 months? What kind of developments are we going to expect?
We think it will not be 6 months. I think it makes 1 or 2 years. First, we hope the bill can be tabled in Parliament. That's what our hope is, because then we can create the nuclear regulatory body that they can build up their capacity to become more competent. If you look at the United Arab Emirates, they imported all the regulators so that they can license the first nuclear power plant. And we have to have a mix of maybe foreign and also Malaysian regulators.
At this point in time,
they must be trusted by the people.
Absolutely. No politicians, hopefully.
Hopefully.
At this point in time, what do you think are the chances of, you know, how do you think the bill will be discussed in Parliament? What kind of direction do you think it's going to take?
I'm not a politician, so I cannot give you any opinion on this. Well, but I think it will be some time.
Oh, okay, well, thank you for your information and the insights. And we do hope we'll keep a very close contact in the months and years ahead, Doc, because obviously Malaysia does need power, but at what cost and at what kind of safety level? So thank you for spending time with us and good luck
with your business
plan. That was Dr. Mohamed Zamzam Jaafar, the Chief Executive of the Malaysian Nuclear Power Corp, BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.